Are we on? Okay, I go by AJ because my full name is Athanasius. And when I went to school, I was called Tom because in Greece they shortened Athanasius to Thanas. And here, Thanas is similar to Thomas, so most people of Greek descent who have my name go by Tom. But when I went to school, the teacher said, "Oh, Athanasius, what a beautiful name. You can call him Athan. Where do you get the Tom from? That's such an ordinary name." So I became Athan, and of course paid for it with ridicule and teasing and stuff. But I took it well. Anyway, now I go by AJ Economides. And I just turned 88 years old a week ago. And today is May 14th, May 14th, 2015. Location, do they want location where I was born or...
Oh, you should just say Chicago.
We're at the Chicago Cultural Center at StoryCorps. And my partner across the way here is my youngest son, who's only 40 what?
Well, I guess it's my turn to get into that. I'm Theo Economides. Full name is Gregory Theo Economides. Theo was a cooler name, so... When I turned 40, I decided to go by Theo. I'm 49, pushing 50 in a few months. Today's date is May 14th, 2015. We're at the Chicago Cultural Center, and I'm here with my dad. So let's get started, Dad. I kind of want to start out with a little bit of history. Tell the story about how you met Mom. You already talked about being Greek. We're Greek, and I think that played into how you met Mom, didn't it?
My mom or your mom?
My mom. How did you? I know how you met your mom. How did you meet my mom? She wasn't my mom then.
Well, our families knew each other from the get-go, and reason was because the Christophers were related to my dad, Mr. Christopher. Mrs. Christopher was related to your mother's mother. So we got to know each other, and I remember your mother when she was like 14 years old, and cousin Chris would, when we'd go out driving, when they're visiting and so on, and Chris would push Frida towards me, and I would look at her, and chubby hair on the legs, and
Mediterranean.
I wasn't
descent, huh?
Interested, but shoot forward a few years, I had just gotten back from the Army, and I was invited to a wedding in Joliet, and Frida was standing up for the wedding, and I asked the friend, "Who is that beautiful gal with the long hair?" "Oh, that's Frida Platon." "Oh, my God, I didn't recognize her." So shortly that day, I hit on her, and the rest is 54 years of marriage.
Right, right. I wanted to hear also a couple of stories about your parents. In particular, growing up for me, I remember you teaching us to break hard-boiled eggs on our forehead. And one particular memory, which will never go away, of when you used a non-hard-boiled egg on my forehead and gave me an egg shampoo. But there's a story about your dad bringing his new wife over on the boat, right, about hard-boiled eggs and her forehead, right?
Well, it was typical of men in Greece, because they heard of the new land with gold lying in the streets, to come over and try to make their way here rather than in the old country. And actually, both parents were in Turkey, were born in Turkey, mm-hmm. but they were Greek areas, and they never acknowledged that that was Turkish land. But on my birth certificate, they said it was Greece that mm-hmm. I was born in, or mm-hmm. they were born in. Anyway, typically men came over, made a living and so on, and then went back to Greece to find a wife.
Mm-hmm.
And typically they'd ask friends and neighbors, is there an available nice person that I could marry?
Mm-hmm.
And they mentioned my mother, and he met her, and in a few days they were on their way back married. my mother was never too happy about
right.
that kind of thing. But on the other hand, there weren't that many suitors to find love,
mm-hmm.
such. And it was a typical thing that most of the women there were happy to get a husband who was coming to the United States.
Mm-hmm. So it really wasn't an arranged marriage, but it was friends setting them up.
It was an arranged marriage, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Anyway, the one thing that Mom didn't care for was that we were sort of isolated because we were on a farm and there were no neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
But she tried learning how to drive and couldn't handle it, mm-hmm. which would have been very good for her, but she never managed it and
mm-hmm.
didn't want to try it on her own.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd go to church. Sundays was a work day for the farm because the Monday market was the biggest day of market, so Sunday was a busy day. Saturdays were the off day, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times Mom would get my brother or me or the third brother or the fourth brother
mm-hmm.
to drive her to church and mm-hmm. of course attend church, the 4-hour ceremony.
That's the way the Greeks do it.
Orthodox church.
Right.
Which none of us particularly like to do,
mm-hmm.
but we all like to drive. So that was a trade-off.
Right. But I wanted to get to the egg story on the boat coming over with your dad and his new bride. Remember the one I'm talking about?
I don't remember a story about where the eggs on the boat.
Where he was it? Oh, maybe I'm remembering wrong. But he cracked the egg on her head. Do you remember that story?
No, but I can believe it.
I remember you telling the story that I think it was on the boat at the captain's table that your dad was a bit of a prankster, right?
Yeah.
And he knew that if you bash the egg on the wide side, it's a soft, it doesn't hurt, but if you hit with the tip, it can hurt. And I think he grabbed a hard-boiled egg and bashed it on your mom's forehead on the soft side, but it freaked her out and she ran away.
That probably...
Well, we're not here to hear my story, my version of your story.
Awakening.
But tell me more about the about driving, then driving to church, driving to Chicago for the farmers market.
Well, I liked working on the farm. I was active outdoors person. Connie was more of a radio person. He'd sit in the house and listen to radio while I'd be outside. I made a a basketball target with a bushel basket, and I would throw wrapped up block, brick, wrapped it in gunny sacks, and I would throw it up there.
And that was your basketball?
That was my basketball. Eventually, I got a real basketball. But that bushel basket was still the hoop. And I cut the bottom out and used it. For a short guy, I was an avid basketballer. That was my favorite sport.
Mm-hmm.
And in grade school, I was on the basketball team. As a matter of fact, I was the shortest guy on the team, and I was the center for the first year because I could jump higher than anybody else.
Now, you know, I remember you talking about that back in those days, basketball wasn't a tall guy's sport, right? The tall guys were considered to be too slow for basketball.
Well, yeah, some of the tall guys were clumsy.
Mm-hmm.
And we young, shorter guys were fast and on the ball.
And so that's, you were fast and quick and you could jump higher than the other guys.
Yeah. I was pretty good at jumping. In grade school, we had all kinds of sports. The track and jumping.
Track and field?
Over.
Or the hurdles?
Over hurdles, we even had a high jump, a pole vault.
Uh-huh.
I was the only one that I ever saw who was able to get over the lowest part, and I got pretty good at it. But we had one pole, and I ended up breaking it. So that was the end of the pole vault.
So you ruined it for only yourself because no one else was doing it, huh?
But we played baseball, modified tennis. I got involved in tennis because I liked it,
mm-hmm.
and we had to carry our own net. The parks didn't have nets.
Oh, okay.
So I had one, and I had it in my bike. And if I put up the net, you'd get a few people coming around to play. And I would carry an extra racket with me so somebody...
I could just show up and,
it up and we'd,
join
we'd
you.
Play.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved tennis. As a matter of fact, in high school, the captain of the tennis team, I would practice with. And play him, and often I would beat him. And he'd say, "Why aren't you on the team?" I said, "I got my reasons." He never found out that I couldn't do backhand. All the rackets were the same size handle. Mm-hmm. I have short fingers.
Mm-hmm.
Try the backhand, the racket comes right out of your hand.
Okay.
But anyway, he had talked to the coach. And he says, "This guy's beating me. He's got to be on the team." So the coach asked me to play a game with him. And I said, "You know, I don't have any backhand." "Why?" I said, "My hand is too small and the racket's too big." Well, today, of course, they have different size, and they also use two hands.
Right, and that's why you're playing tennis now. Right?
I wish I were. Anyway, I played with the coach, and he says, "Oh, you are good. I could put a spin on that ball like you wouldn't believe." But I said, "Now hit the ball to my left side," and I was pretty fast and usually could get around what the amateurs were doing and get the ball with my right hand. But when he hit some fast ones, the lefty realized that I couldn't do the backhand.
Okay. I want to get a little bit more, just a couple more questions about your family early on. What is your what would you say is your earliest memory, the earliest thing you can recall?
When I was 2 years old, our house burned down to the ground. It was a 2.5-story old wooden thing, and from the chimney, I guess it got some sparks, and I think it was a wooden ceiling.
Mm-hmm. And this was in Joliet?
In Joliet, right? On the farm. And I vaguely remember something like that. Because I wanted to play with the fire, and Mom grabbed me. But for several years after that, and as I got older, I would have dreams of running away from something and not knowing what it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of a what do they call those wacky dreams when they're scary?
Oh, nightmare?
Nightmares.
Yeah.
Not a full-fledged nightmare, but I have this recurring dream for a number of years until I was like 15, 16. And finally it diminished. But anyway.
So that's your earliest memory. You have some other ideas there in your paper.
Oh, well, there was an incident. My dad had helpers, shirt string relatives sometimes working on the farm, and because they would live in the house with us, my mother was unhappy about that. Mm-hmm. And not 3 meals a day
right.
for big eaters and such. But there was one time when we'd go out to the asparagus patch, which was my favorite vegetable, and somebody was cutting it during the night. So this guy, whether he was an uncle or something, he was a hunter. So he took the shotgun and laid for him at night, and I snuck out of the house and laid down with him in a depression there. And we see the two guys come with a wagon, and they start cutting the stuff. And I tell them, shoot them. No, let them cut the stuff, because they obviously were cutting it with the right tool, and were cutting it well. So finally, when they had both wagons pretty much loaded and the entire field was cleared, then he stands up and yells at him, "What are you doing?" And he fires a shot in the air, and they start running and lift the wagon.
So you got some free labor, huh?
The one wagon they managed to take with them, but they dumped all the stuff running, and the tracks were right there.
Yeah.
They ran up the tracks, and he shot at him with a fine shot, number six, and at a distance, it hurt him, but it didn't. No way it was going to kill him. So they learned a lesson. They never came back, as far as we know.
And you got some free labor and one cart out.
They were clearing the entire field.
How long did that take? I mean, how big of a field was it?
Pretty close to an hour.
So they came there to steal the crops, and you used them as free labor and shot them in the process. Yep.
And we ended up with the broken down wagon. It wasn't.
Yeah.
It was a wagon, but it wasn't much good. But they never came back, so we had to cut our own. And of course, asparagus was my favorite crop, because when my birthday was coming around, Dad would say, "You know, I'm out of money now. I've spent it for fertilizer and for seeds and for this and that." Mm-hmm. And when the asparagus crop comes in, that's our first thing. The first money we make from that, I'll get you a birthday present.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be out there breathing on the asparagus to grow faster. Because by May 1st, it didn't come up yet.
Right, right. What was your favorite birthday present that came from asparagus money?
I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I think it was a scooter.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have a sidewalk. And both Connie and I, and Mom wanted a sidewalk too. They put in a sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
It was a narrow one, and it wasn't that long, but it was okay for a scooter.
Okay.
Later on, we, with Connie, we bought a bike, and we put it on layaway. You know how layaway works. It's your bike, but you can't have it until you pay for it. So Christmas came around, and we owed, I forget how much. I want to say $50, but it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been $5 or $10.
Mm-hmm.
And Dad gave us the money. Go get the bike.
All right.
And it was snowing outside.
Oh.
But I was gutsy, and I rode it in the snow. I was the first one to ride it. And Connie is saying, don't hurt the bike.
Right, right, don't hurt
the bike. He didn't care about me. I could break my head, but don't hurt the bike. But he didn't want to go out in the snow with it.
Right.
So he rode it in the spring.
Mm-hmm. Have you got a favorite memory of your mom?
Well, she was a terrific baker.
Mm-hmm.
Between cakes and baklava and
mm-hmm.
all the other Greek things, it was amazing that she could find time to do those things. And she couldn't go to the grocery store and buy phyllo.
Mm-hmm. She had to make it.
Wow. And very often, Tia Marigula, Mrs. Christopher,
mm-hmm.
would come over and clear the table, and we would help pulling on the dough to get it nice and thin. And
right.
Then they'd make... My dad favored Visiotico, and they called it that, Milina, but my dad was from Visa in Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And because he loved it so much, it became Visiotico.
Oh.
For the Greeks in Joliet. Not many others made that.
And remind me of...
rice.
Okay.
And, of course, everything would get syrup. Poured over it.
Right, right. So that was rice inside, and the phyllo would roll around it, and then the syrup poured over the top.
I've made it a couple of times. You may not have. Had
so outside of Joliet and outside of our family, nobody knows Visiotico.
They know Milina though.
Milina though.
But it's not that popular.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thing.
How did your wife, my mom, how did her baking compared to what you're used to growing up? How was it different? Because she came from a different family, different traditions. Was it the same? Was it different?
Her mother and my mother, they all came from Turkey.
Right.
They were called Turkomeritides. And their food was sort of flavored a little bit by the Turkish kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So they pretty much did the same things. And Frida's mother would cook meals, and Frida would do the baking. So she was a pretty good baker.
Mm-hmm.
when we got married. She learned how to boil water after a while. Well, I was a good cook, and at our boarding house, the last year when Cotty and I graduated, and he left, and we hadn't sold the boarding
house.
Right,
and that
yet.
Was in Champaign, right?
In Champaign.
After you were working the boarding house while you were in college.
Yeah.
And then after
and
college.
And we had a cook.
Right.
But then I had graduated in 2.5 years with honors, I might say,
mm-hmm.
both years. And Connie graduated in 4.5 years, I think maybe 5 years, I don't remember what.
Mm-hmm.
But he graduated in January of 1949, and I graduated in August of 1949.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he had a girlfriend in Colorado, whom he ended up marrying, Twyla. But he took off and said, sell the house. Well, the market for tenants had gone way down because it was right after World War II,
mm-hmm.
1945, all the GIs came back. They had the GI Bill. 4 years later, there weren't very many GIs coming, so the attendance dropped.
Mm-hmm.
We had hit a high of like 18,500 enrollees at the University of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
When the GIs left in 1949, we were down to 15,000 enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, the university was building more billeting, and it became a tough way to go for the independent houses, which we were, and also, in selling it, it was hard to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And Connie was in Colorado, and he'd call me, haven't you sold it yet? Haven't you sold it yet? I said, you come here and try to sell it. After a year, and I, instead of hiring a cook, I did the cooking.
Okay.
I went on the recommendation of a friend. I wanted a night job, so I'd be in the house during the day
mm-hmm.
so the kids wouldn't tear it up.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this night job loading trucks at the docks. I said, oh, that'd be perfect. The guy said, it pays pretty good, and
mm-hmm.
it's 11 to 7, that shift.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and talked to the foreman. He hired me. Come Thursday night, 11 o'clock, and
mm-hmm.
you're hired. He was questioning me because you're sort of small, and like, can you handle these things? I can handle anything, and I was strong,
mm-hmm.
so I convinced him. He was fine with it. That morning, I get a call to go and see Mr. Eisner, who was president of the company.
Okay.
And incidentally, it was the company that we bought provisions from for our kitchen.
Ah.
And apparently our salesman saw my application on his desk. So he called me in and he said, I understand you made an application to work on our docks. I said, yes, I did. And he says, and I understand you're a college graduate. I said, well, yeah. He says, you didn't put that on your application. I said, I didn't feel that was a necessary attribute for that job.
He says, no,
it isn't. But college graduate? I can't have a college graduate working on the docks. It's just not right.
Mm-hmm.
So I begged him. I said, it's not going to be my career, but I need a job at night now. And,
mm-hmm.
Well, I can't do that. I'll make you assistant manager in one of our stores. They had the Piggly Wiggly chain
I
of
see.
Stores.
Okay.
I said, that's a day job. I need a night job. So he would not hire me.
Really?
It wasn't right for a college graduate to be loading trucks at night. That's a little different today.
Right.
But anyway, that's when I decided that I'd do the cooking.
Okay.
For 40 hungry mouths.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And finally, Connie kept after me. I spent a year and a half down here trying to sell the place. You come down and try to sell it. So I took off, and at that point, I wanted to get married. I was going with your mother.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't able to fill it with students, so he just made it their home and would house some students without food. It was easier to get those type of students.
Okay. Yeah.
But we did all right with that. We made some money.
Good. So we're getting towards the end of our interview. I want to come forward in time a little bit. Was there something on your sheet there that you wanted to...
Well, there's a lot on my sheet.
Well, let's get into that. We've got about 10 minutes left.
All right. Well, I told you about the asparagus attack.
Right, right.
The farm was bordered by Hickory Creek, three quarters of the way around.
Mm-hmm.
The other side was the railroad tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And I was adventurous, much more so than Connie was. And my mother would be scared to death about our crossing the tracks,
mm-hmm.
or playing in the water.
Rightly so.
And one time I found a raft, a little raft, and I captured it. And I talked Connie into getting on it with me, so we went up and down the creek a bit, and we came to the landing spot, and I jumped out, and I said, okay, you got to jump. He didn't make it. one leg made it, the other one. So he ended up going in the water, which was 2.5-3 feet
mm-hmm.
there. But he soaked his clothes, and we tried to get in the house. Heidi and Mom caught us, and she was angry, mostly with me, because she knew I was the instigator for that.
Because mm-hmm.
Connie wouldn't do anything like that on his own. He just didn't have that kind of dangerous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she tied us in the basement. Well, of course, the way she tied us, because she always worried about our going on the railroad tracks or
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
to the creek. And just as punishment, she tied us there. And of course, we untied it in a couple of minutes, but when she was coming down the stairs, we pretended that the rope was still tied.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, she was pretty desperate. And I guess I wasn't a very good kid because I gave her a lot of consternation.
You caused the gray hairs on her head?
Yep, yep.
What else have you got there?
Well, I got here that I was a champion tree climber, which I was. Nobody could climb a tree higher than I could.
And this was, what, last year? I'm kidding.
Well, after high school, I went into the service at, like, the end of World War II, but it was still considered wartime in 1946,
mm-hmm.
In basic training in Little Rock, Arkansas. I was the only one to ever shoot a perfect score on the rifle range.
Wow.
And that was because of the BB gun I had.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have a rifle to practice with. But the big shots didn't quite believe it, so had three big-time officers, major and colonel, that had me do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it again, except on the last shot, I missed it by the bullseye by a quarter of an inch. So they agreed that I had done a perfect shot.
So there was
no
trickery.
One else had ever done it. So that was quite a crowning point. But I figured, you know, they're going to make me a sniper and send me to Vietnam, which I wasn't too happy about.
No.
But no, I ended up going to Germany. I had applied for OCS, Officer's Candidate, and my written, is it 10 minutes or two?
Five.
Anyway, my written score was second to this guy that I was helping with his calisthenics because he was bright, but he was clumsy. He couldn't do it. So they disqualified him. And I was at the top, but it meant signing up for another 4 years after going to school. And then they screwed up
anyway.
Going to OCS
meant you would have to stay up for another four?
They screwed up, and orders came through for me and a couple of other guys who were also scheduled to go to the next OCS class, we were being shipped overseas. Actually, there were five of us.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the guys went to the Inspector General, and I think they got it straightened out, but I wanted to go overseas anyway. Mm-hmm. And when my time was almost up, it turned out that I became a radio operator because they were teaching the kids 13 words a minute. And I already could do 25 to 30 words a minute in high school.
This is Morse code.
Playing around
right.
Morse code.
Right.
So when they found that out, I became the top radio operator in our company. But the records for OCS caught up with me, and they had opened up an OCS in Germany. But it was getting close to the time that I'd be released, and they tried. We were so short of men then that they were trying so very hard to get us to reenlist. The major who was in charge of enlistment was also in charge of communication, so he was my boss, and he was putting the pressure on.
He had it for you.
I said, well, how long will I have to sign up for after going to the school? 4 years. I said, well, I've got 2 years in now, 6 months school plus 4 years. That's long enough to just stay in and make the Army career. You should be in the Army as a career. You're so good at this and everything else. And I thought about it for a bit, but I decided, I'd rather go home and go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did.
Good.
Okay. And I graduated 4-year course in two and a half years.
Right.
Carried 21 and 22 hours a semester.
Good.
And I made honors. So I was a smartass.
Yeah, you were. You still are. I wouldn't
well,
want you any other way.
I can't remember much of anything.
Anything else on your list that you wanted to go over?
Well, in Germany, I was involved in the capture of the fourth person on our CIC list who was a major at one of the death camps.
Oh.
And that was quite a quite a catch.
Had you been looking for that person in particular?
Well, we had a list of 10 most wanted from the CIC, which was former Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
A list from the CID, Criminal Investigation Division, of ordinary criminals.
Mm-hmm.
And he was number 4 on the SS list. And when we brought him in, I wanted to be in on the interrogation. It's, no. Nobody comes in and listens. Oh, come on. We endangered ourselves going after this guy. Finally, they said, there's a coroner in a chair in that corner. You're not there. You don't see anything. You don't hear anything. You don't ever talk about anything.
And now?
And they let me stay in there. And that's what I learned, that there's this good cop and the bad cop.
Is that what they used on that guy? The
little guy was beating the crap out of him. And this major had a degree from Oxford in England, and he refused to speak English. And the guys knew that he knew better English than most of us,
mm-hmm.
and they wanted to get him to speak English. And he kept saying, "Nich," and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
He finally cracked down and started crying. But they beat on him pretty viciously.
And you weren't there, and you didn't watch the whole thing.
I didn't see the
thing.
That's the way it was. Is our time up?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Fini.
as I knew you would, Dad, you easily filled the time to record. You're full of stories, and that's why I wanted to bring you here today.
Didn't have time to say anything about your brothers.
Probably better that way.
Thank you very much.